Okay, good. Go ahead. Okay, Parshas Tetzaveh, Tavshin Ayin Aleph. Alrighty. What we're going to do is we're going to ask a simple, straightforward question which comes directly out of the reading of the Pshat of these two Parshas, Trum and Tetzaveh, which together teach us about all the items to be built that are to be part of, included within the structure of the Mishkan. In other words, the necessary kelim, the necessary vessels or utensils, and the Mishkan itself. And what we're going to see is that the introduction of the various kelim that need to be built to eventually be used in the Mishkan isn't in order. Because when you walk into the Mishkan, coming in, you know, from the opening of the Mishkan face the east, so as you walked, and also the Beis HaMikdash, as you walked in, you were facing the west. And as you walked into the Heichal, the main sanctuary, in front of the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh Kodashim, there were three kelim. Right away, the first keli that you encountered was the Mizbeach HaZahav, the golden Mizbeach, which is also called the interior Mizbeach, the Mizbeach HaPnim, which is also called the Mizbeach HaKetores, the incense Mizbeach. That was the first one. It was smack in the middle. It was in a direct line with the outside Mizbeach, which was for slaughtering animals, and ahead of it, behind the curtain, the Aron, which held the broken, the second Luchos and the broken pieces of the first Luchos, all on a line. Remember we said that the Mishkan, in a strange way, resembled the features on a person's face. Remember? The mouth represents the Mizbeach outside that you sacrifice animals and eat of those animals, right? That you partake of it, your food, your meat. You walked inside, there was a Mizbeach HaKetores, which is associated with the nose. It's incense, it's smell. Then there was a Shulchan and a menorah associated with the two eyes. And behind the curtain, in another kind of, in its own domain, the Aron with the Luchos representing the mind of a person, right? So, in Teruma you see that the Shulchan and the menorah are dealt with, but it just leaves out the Mizbeach HaKetores. And not until the end of Tetzaveh, when it's already spoken about all the other kelim, the Aron, the Shulchan, the menorah, the Mizbeach, everything, and the Mishkan itself and how to build it, the structure itself. Finally, at the very end, the last few psukim of Tetzaveh, it's already spoken about the big day kahuna, the garments of the Kohen. And after all of that, stuck in the last section of Tetzaveh, which is on page 480 and 481 and 482, is the Mizbeach HaKetores. So our basic, simple question is, why is it not included with the other kelim? And we're going to see that according to the Ramban, who reads the Pshat, it is not really of the same ilk. It doesn't serve the same purpose as the other kelim. It stands by itself, and it is the result of the proper avoda taking place in the other kelim. In other words, when we do what we're supposed to do with the outside mizbeach and the shulchan and the menorah, right, with the outside altar and the table and the candelabra, when all that is used correctly and is functioning correctly, then the Mizbeach HaKetores represents the result of all of that. It's what it's all for. So Ramban goes like this. He looks into the end of the Parsha of Tetzaveh. Turn to page 480. And after the discussion of the Karbanos themselves, which are offered outside, are concluded, then there's a summation, a couple of psukim that summarize the whole thing. And it says here, Pasuk Mem Hey in Pasuk 45, V'shachanti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. If everything that we've just discussed is done correctly, everything in the last two portions, Truma and Tetzaveh, V'shachanti b'soch b'nei Yisrael, and then I will dwell in the midst of b'nei Yisrael, V'yisi lahem le'elokim, and I will be for them as a God. In other words, I will be with them, one with them, revealed through them, connected to them, right? V'yado, and they will know ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, that I am Hashem your God, asher hotzeisi osam mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Now the reason I took them out of Mitzrayim, l'shachni b'sochem, to dwell amongst them, Ani Hashem, I am God, your Elohim. The whole purpose of it all is ultimately the reason I took you out of Mitzrayim is to put together this Mishkan so that there will be a place that I can, so to speak, dwell amongst Klal Yisrael. L'shachni b'sochem, I will have a dwelling place among Klal Yisrael. That is the purpose of all of it. And then we get into chapter 30, Perek Lamed, the halachas of Ketores. So that means, Ramban says, that the reason Ketores is afterwards is because it's the expression of the success of this venture that Hashem is dwelling among us. That's what Ketores teaches us. It's not something to achieve Hashem's dwelling among us. It's rather a proof that Hashem dwells among us. So what we have to look into is what is the symbolism? In other words, what does the Ketores really mean on a philosophical sense? How does it work? Because the Ketores is incense. It has 11 ingredients. It's incense. And yet it's meant to represent that we've succeeded, that Hashem is dwelling amongst us. Okay? So what we're going to do here is start with a famous piece in the Gemara that describes the origin of the Ketores. Where does the Ketores come from? Our objective is to understand how Ketores symbolizes the success of all the efforts we've put into bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, to dwell among us, which means to be revealed from among Klal Yisrael. So here's the language of the Gemara. And you know by now that the Gemara doesn't write in essay form. It writes in riddle form. It writes in layers upon layers upon layers. And it's meant for us to decipher, to understand what things mean. And we're never supposed to take this stuff simplistically and literally. Everything is kind of like revealing as it's hiding in its metaphorical words, in its analogies. It's revealing for us on deeper and deeper levels, deep truths, deep fundamental truths. So here's the famous Gemara. This Gemara comes from this is, of course, most of these ideas come from Rav Moshe Shapiro. This is from the Gemara in Shabbos. So it says like this. We'll do most of it in English. That when Moshe Rabbeinu went to receive the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Malachim put up an argument. And the Malachim said, why would you give the Torah to people? You should leave the Torah up here in heaven. Right? That's the famous argument of the Malachim. We have to understand what that argument means. What are they saying? What are Chazal conveying to us through this image of the Malachim arguing that the Torah should be in Shemayim? Who are Malachim? And why should the Torah be in Shemayim? And what are they opposed to Moshe taking the Torah down to earth, right? So the Malachim say, Rabbona Shlolam, ma li yilud isha beinena, what does this one born of a woman have to be amongst us? And he says, Hashem says, l'kabel Torah ba, he came to receive the Torah. Amru l'fanav, they said to him, you have this precious treasure, and you're going to give it to flesh and blood? Hashem said to Moshe, find an answer for them. Moshe said, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm afraid they will sear me, burn me with their fiery breath. Hashem said, so grab hold of my throne of glory, my Kisei HaKavod, and answer them. So we have to understand what that means. Moshe's afraid of them. He's holding on to the throne of glory in order to answer them, right? So then this is Moshe's answer. Moshe says to them, did you go down to Mitzrayim? Were you slaves to Paro? Do you have parents that you have to, that you're obligated in Kivud of the Aim? Immediately they heard the legitimacy of Moshe's argument, and they acquiesced that he's right, that the Torah should come down to earth with Moshe. Furthermore, not only did they acquiesce that he's right, but they gave him gifts. Okay, they all gave him gifts. And even the Malach HaMavis gave him a gift. And the gift that the Malach HaMavis gave Moshe was the Ketores, the secret of the Ketores. As you know, that Moshe and Aaron used the Ketores when there was a Magefa, when there was a plague, after the incident of Korach. Everybody was dying. They took Ketores, they ran with it through the camp, and it stopped the death penalty. In other words, it restored life. So the Malach HaMavis gives Moshe a gift, which is the Ketoret, which is Ketores, which is its own oppositional force, which destroys it. So what is this? What is going on? You must realize when we read Gemaras like this, there's so much depth, and it's time to, you know, to work on it, to peel away the layers, starting at the beginning. What do we mean by the argument that the Malachim had that how could you give this precious treasure to humans? And Moshe's response, well, we went down to Egypt and we were slaves and we have parents. The Torah applies to us. First of all, in order to understand this, what is a Malach? That's simple point number one. When we say there are Malachim, what do we mean? So a Malach, we know, is a messenger. Sometimes messengers are called malachim. Sometimes the messengers of Hashem are referred to as Hashem's words. For example, Yishlach Devaro, he sends forth his words, and he cures them, V'yirpa'im, and he cures them. Now we know there's a malach called Rifael. We also know that Hashem sends out his word, and people are cured through the word of Hashem. Yishlach devaro v'yamsim, that Hashem sends out his words and melts them. We say that in one of the Hallelukas. Hashem's words, you know, create a force that has an effect. And here we learn, the Gemara says, kol dibor v'dibor sheyotze mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nivra mimenu malach echad. Every word that emanates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a malach is created from it. So, when we talk about malachim, we're definitely not talking about creatures with wings, even though Yechezkel, when he gives us a glimpse into what's going on up there, he does describe malachim with six wings and four wings. It's all not in a literal sense, obviously. The wings represent things, and the one legs of the single leg of the malach represents things. We've actually spoken about it here. It's not literal. What is a malach? A malach we're seeing is synonymous. This is a fundamental yesod. This is how you explain it rationally. A malach, what we call an angel, is synonymous with the word of Hashem. And the word of Hashem means the will of Hashem, because Hashem doesn't have a mouth and a tongue and teeth, so it means Hashem wants something, or Hashem expresses that his will. That's called the word of Hashem. That goes out into the world as a force that must be. If Hashem wills something, so to speak, expresses that will through, so to speak, words, okay, then it is. Then it's a force that exists in the world. So every will, aspect of Hashem's will, every word of Hashem is a malach. It's a force that goes out into the world to accomplish that task. That's what a malach is. So when a malach says, well, you have a precious treasure, why send it down to earth? That's the same thing as saying the words of Hashem, in a sense, are expressing the idea, or we have to think about the words or the will of Hashem. Once Hashem has a will, and then Hashem gives it to human beings of flesh and blood, who he gave Bechira to express that will, or through their Bechira violate it, degrade it, ignore it, Why would that be? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu put his perfect truth, his own will, into the hands of people to choose to either express or ignore? If Hashem wants to be known in the world or revealed in the world, which is another way of saying Hashem's words or will goes out as a malach, as a force in the world, if Hashem wants to be known, then leave people out of it. People are not, there's no guarantee they're going to do this with Hashem's words. Leave Hashem's words, the Torah, up in heaven with the malachim. In other words, if Hashem wants to be known, Hashem can make it that he is known by himself, not via people who might or might not live up to this, right? Why in the world are you allowing Torah truth to be expressed through people? Now, we've spoken about this many, many times, right? That the most astonishing thing of all things, the greatest act of love of all loves, is that Hashem's fate, so to speak, is in our hands, to be known or not to be known. And that Hashem will only truly be known in the world through Klal Yisrael. Right? Remember we've spoken about this? That's the first bracha in Shemoneh Esrei. Umevi goel livnei b'neihem. Hashem brings geula to Klal Yisrael. Leman shemo, for the sake of his own name. That's bi'ahava. That's the greatest love at all. That Hashem is hostage, so to speak, to us. That only through our salvations and our Yeshuas that come through us will Hashem be known and revealed in this world. That's the love that Hashem bound himself to Klal Yisrael. Right? So the Malachim are asking this question. Why give it to people? You can be known through your word, through your Malachim, without any interference. Just leave it in the realms of Hashem. Don't give it to people to get involved with. So Moshe answers no. The Torah is expressed through our concretely actualizing the mitzvahs, kibud av v'aim, going through the life experiences that teach us these truths. That's how Torah is known. In other words, what Moshe is saying, and with the Malachim all acquiesce and give him gifts. Now we'll talk about the gifts in a minute, but what is Moshe's argument? No. The fact is that Hashem set up a world that through humanity, through the lessons we learn, through our journey through history, and the truths we come to reveal, and the mitzvahs we keep, that's what creates the Malach. That's what creates the Dibur of Hashem. That's what sends out the word of Hashem into the world. Hashem doesn't do it himself up in heaven. It comes through us. In other words, the Malachim are at the disposal of us. We achieve something in Ruchnius. That, so to speak, creates a Malach. The Nefesh HaChaim says, and all the kids come home with this, every time you do a mitzvah, you're creating a Malach, which is another way of saying, when we do a mitzvah, when we do the right thing and refuse to do the wrong thing, we have expressed, we've spoken on behalf of God, which means we've created a malach, a force, a message, which is the Dibur of Hashem going out into the world through us. And the malachim accepted immediately that this is the case, that the Dibur of Hashem emanates from people, that malachim are created by people. They are the force of our example, of our commitment that expresses to the world, the Dibur of Hashem, or the Malach of Hashem, the force that is released in the world that affects everything. That is that human beings, a human being is the source, so to speak, of the Malach. So the Malach gives him gifts. They all give gifts. Now, the Malach, or the word of Hashem, okay, the Malach doesn't have possessions or savings to give a gift, so what does that mean? What that means, Rav Shapira says, is the Malach, or the Dibur of Hashem, acquiesces and puts itself at the disposal to be used by human beings. In other words, we are your creation. We are subject to you. We're not up here in heaven to reveal, so to speak, the words of Hashem. We're put into this earth to be revealed through you. Now, the gift that the Malach HaMavas gave Moshe, the angel of death gives Moshe the gift of the Ketores. So what is the secret? This is the secret. Chazal are expressing it through this analogy. The Malach HaMavas, we know, as we know it to be, a death force. And yet, its gift, so to speak, what it does, the service it provides, it actually stops death. Through the Ketores. We said that when there was a big plague, right, Moshe and Aaron after Korach took the Ketores, and it stopped the plague. It stopped death. It's the source of life. How's that? So now we go into the idea of what is the Malach HaMavas. So Chazal tell us it's the Satan, it's the Yetzihara, it's the Kategor, the prosecutor, it's the Malach HaMavas. Okay, so it's a force in the world that has a number of roles. Its role is for Satan, or Yetzihara, which means tempter, right? That's the tempter. That's that which comes to us. It's part of an innate, inbred, natural kind of desire of a person to either attach themselves to their biological, emotional impulses and define themselves by those and express them, or to overcome that and express not what is the immediate and the physical, but what is eternal, everlasting, and true. There are two forces in a person, that which drives them to be more like an angel, and that which drives them to be more like an animal. and a person wavers between the two. And sometimes within 2 minutes, you could express both of them. A person can be magnanimous and loving and kind and, you know, and transcend their own selfish basic needs. And in 2 minutes, be like an animal and angry and vengeful, goes back and forth, right? Now, we know the Yetzer is there to tempt you, to give you an option, to use your Bechira to choose to be more God-like and less animal-like, okay? If a person makes a mistake and thinks that it's not, it's like, you know, we always say weights at the gym. They're not there to rip your muscles to shreds. They're there to help you, if you use them correctly, build your muscles, right? But if a person sees this temptation as the only driving force in their life, that if they give into it, then they'll be happy. They misread this Malach of Hashem, and instead of seeing that it's sent here to build us and increase us and bring us closer to Hashem through our own free will, that they misread it and think it's to take us away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which it can't be. How could something Hashem created have a purpose to separate you from Hashem? Everything Hashem created is good and is for good. So how could it be that there is some force in the world that's there to destroy your connection with Hashem? We don't have any such concept. By the way, this is a devil. All right, we don't have a devil. This is a Satan, as it's conceived of in religions other than ours. We don't have a Satan. We have a Malach of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that's supposed to challenge you and lose. It's just supposed to help you build yourself. It is not supposed to be taken as a force in and of itself that's in opposition to God that you submit to. So once a person gives in to the Yetzer Hara, it goes up to heaven and becomes a prosecutor and says, look what it did. It's against you. It's a double cross. And then Hashem says, fine, you're the Malach HaMavis. Go take away its life. Then he comes back down to destroy the person. So we're never supposed to misread the Malach HaMavis. What we're supposed to do is know that it's a Malach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a dibor, in other words, a force in the world. What force? That most important force of all the forces, the one that allows a person to make a choice between expressing themselves as an animal or giving birth to, as we've spoken about here, their Tzelem Elokim. Every time a person uses their Bechira to do the right thing, they have added to their Tzelem Elokim, that they're slowly cultivating and developing throughout their life. Right, their own, that we give birth to our godly self through our choices day to day. Otherwise, we just express the physical animal self, which isn't really anything that is not, has no eternal value to it, doesn't live forever. So that's the point of the Malach HaMavis. Now, how does the Malach HaMavis have to do with Ketores? Okay, Ketores we know is smell, it's incense, right? Vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim. Through the nose comes the neshama. The word nishima, smell, and the word neshama are connected. Your soul and your sense of smell are connected. What is the role of the smell and to determine life, to be connected to life? Well, interestingly enough, not what your eyes can see and not what your ears can hear, okay, but it's the smell that you use to determine if something is fresh, in other words, full of life, or in the process of decaying, in which it begins to emit a foul, repulsive odor. Right? You smell it. You smell to see if something is life-bound or death-bound. Right? If it is a source of life, and there's nothing more pleasant than an aroma of something fresh, fresh food or fresh flowers or something full of life, and there's nothing more foul than the stench of decay. And it's the nose that determines which one it is. The Malach HaMavis is associated with the Ketores, with the sense of smell. If a person gives in to the Malach HaMavis, okay, which is a force, as we said, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, never meant to win, always meant to lose. We have to know that from the outset. So if a person gives in to the Malach HaMavis and believes that the will of this tempter, of the Yetzer Hara, is their only will and they're helpless against it and it's who they are and therefore they're going to live by it, then that person is beginning to die. That's causing oneself spiritual death. And associated with that is a foul odor of death. Now, you might not see or smell that foul odor of death if you're not sensitive to it, because the person looks very much alive. But there's a stench of death that's right beneath the surface. Okay. However, if a person overcomes this, what we call the Yetzirah, then what emanates from that person is referred to as a pleasant, beautiful smell, the Ketores. It's either or. The Malach HaMavis, this force in the world, either, depending how it's used by people, what we do with it, either causes from us to emanate a stench or a beautiful smell. If it's used correctly, if it's used the way it's supposed to be used, it creates Ketores. So the Malach HaMavis gift to Moshe is this. True. The Torah must be expressed through human beings. That's the way Hashem set up the world. We create the Malach. And the danger is the Malach HaMavis. The danger is that there's a force called the Satan, which if we don't play it right, if we don't manage it right, becomes a Malach HaMavis. It needs an antidote. It needs a counterforce. So the Malach HaMavis gave Moshe the Ketores, the antidote to mismanaging the Yetzirah, the ability to get a hold of oneself, do tshuva, start new, manage it correctly, overcome it, is Ketores. The Malach HaMavis itself gave Moshe the secret of Ketores. Because the Malach HaMavis, so to speak, this force acknowledges its own inherent power, the danger it holds, and it also provides for us the tools at the same time to escape it and to build from ourselves light, to emanate from ourselves life, which is associated with Ketores, pleasant smell, freshness. So this is the Medrash. The Medrash is saying that when time to receive the Torah, everybody understands. Human beings are imperfect because Hashem gave us Bechira. And Hashem gave us the Yetzirah. And therefore it's possible that the words of Hashem will be violated and degraded and ignored down here. Why? Because of that Bechira, because of that Malach HaMavis. It doesn't have to be Malach HaMavis, it's a Satan really. But if it turns into the Malach HaMavis, then what happens? Then there's this foul smell, so to speak. So that force coming along with that force of the Satan to tempt us is also the great force that exists within us to resist that temptation, to want to be attached to our Tzelem Elokim, to constantly go back and try to reattach it if we lost hold, you know, of it. And that creates the concept of the Ketores, the ability to be alive, the life force, the smell, which can instantly distinguish between if something's alive or something's dead. The smell instantly gets it, right away, right? It's not very confusing to know if something's spoiled or it's not. Now, interestingly enough, this, I'm going to put those horrible glasses. interestingly enough, in the end of days, okay, the Gemara says that the Yetzirah has seven names, and the final name is the one that the prophet Yoel refers to it, and it's called Tzifoni, the hidden one. And in the end, what will be with this hidden one? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we know from Pesach, right? It will be Shecht. Hashem ultimately Shechts the Malach HaMavis, right? And when this hidden one is Shechted, again, metaphors. Why is it called hidden? And why is it slaughtered? But when it's slaughtered, really it doesn't even say slaughtered here. It says that what will happen in Yoel, it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take this hidden one and distance it and banish it to a parched and desolate land. In other words, it will no longer exist in a fruitful place. It'll die like as if it's in a desert with nothing to feed it. And when that happens, okay, when that happens, when this Tzifoni, this hidden one, will be banished, its foulness will ascend, its stench will arise, for it has done great evil. So when Hashem kills the Yetzirah, this great stench will fill the world. Now what is this saying? So why is it called hidden? It's called hidden because when a person misconstrues the purpose of the Yetzirah and believes that it's really their own will speaking, not a force that's kind of embedded in them to get them to exercise their spiritual muscles, right? But it's really all they want, and it's all that matters. It's the only thing they want to, you know, want to, you know, express of themselves, right? And they want to constantly, and they want to satisfy it. So then it becomes hidden in them in that it looks like they're alive and they're healthy and they're living. But really hidden in them is, as we said, a foul, decaying essence. But it can't be seen. But what happens when Hashem kills the Yetzer Hara? In other words, what's Hashem shechting the Yetzer Hara or banishing it to a desolate place? That's another way of saying what we talk about will be the nature of the end of days. Umala kol ha'aretz deyas Hashem. When the whole world comes to clearly see and know the truth of what is MS in this world. When the Yetzer Hara no longer provides for us any type of temptation because the truth is so clear. What's right and what's true is seen to us as pure and perfect and desirable. So in a sense, the Yetzer Hara is seen for what it is. So when it's kind of extricated from the person, then the foul smell, so to speak, attached to it, the smell of decay and death and falsity that it is, that it carries with it, it exits humanity, and everybody begins to stand back in a sense in horror of this smell, this lie, this sheker that they believed was MS and good and what they wanted. So as it leaves with a terrible stench. It's seen for what it is, so to speak. Right? So at the end of days, this hidden decay is released, and the world, before the world is purified to see just truth, it sees first gets a whiff of the extent of the lies and the falsity and the evil that it took for its proper structure. By the way, an example is this. I mean, the commentaries are writing about this now with Egypt. Now all the dirt, all the ugliness, all the abuse, all the corruption, it's all on display for everybody to see, right? So sometimes as it's revealed, as it's, you know, extricated from its host, we get a whiff of what it is. So in the end of days, that's how it's described. That Hashem will take what's hidden, what's really dead and decaying, and everybody will stand back in horror. You can't smell something so foul like that as it makes its way, as it leaves, because now there'll be no more place for that. It'll be seen for what it is, and no one will be tempted by it. And the only thing that will remain is the pleasant aroma, right? The aroma of real life. Now, Mashiach, okay? Mashiach is described as being able to judge humanity. The Mashiach will judge humanity through his sense of smell. This is what Chazal say, okay? Yeshayahu says, V'haricho b'yiras Hashem, he'll smell if a person has yiras Hashem. V'lo l'mare einav, not what his eyes see, will he judge. V'lo l'mishna aznav yochich, and not what his ears hear, will he determine the truth. He'll smell it. Mashiach is described as being able to smell out the yiras Shemayim in a person. Now, we know that in terms of Nevi'im, okay, no Navi really had an absolute sense of whether a person was a Tzaddik or a Rasha, or had Yiras Shemayim, fear of heaven, or didn't. As you know, the famous proof, what's the classic proof for this? Right? Shmuel HaNavi was sent to pick a son of Yishai to be the next Mashiach Hashem, anointed one of Hashem. And he thought that the oldest son was definitely the right candidate. He was tall and power and imposing and authoritative and brilliant and everything. And Hashem said, no, because you only see externally, but I see inside in his qualities. His inner qualities are not acceptable. If Shmuel HaNavi couldn't see whether a person was, you know, a Yare or true, you know, a person who was filled truly with Yiras Shemayim, no Navi can see that. And we've spoken about this. And if a Navi can't see it, don't think any human being can see it. Don't look to anyone else to truly determine for you your level of Yiras Shemayim and who you are and what your avoda is. You know that best of all if you look into yourself. And yes, there are people that are psychologically intuitive, but nobody has nevuah, insight into your neshama. The only one that has it is Mashiach. Because Mashiach is the ultimate judge of the great Yom Hadin, the great day of judgment of the future. Which is why my grandfather used to say, you know, everyone says, we want Mashiach now. He says, trust me, it's good for the world. But if you heard Mashiach was coming, who with the sense of smell, which we'll in a minute discuss, is going to smell out who's who, you'll run to the deepest, darkest cave and hope he never finds you. So this concept of smelling, okay, of smelling Yirah Shemayim in a person. What that means is that in the time of Mashiach, okay, either it'll become evident, and through Mashiach himself, when Mashiach elevates, the time period of Mashiach elevates everyone, it even elevates Mashiach himself, by the way. Very interesting idea. Mashiach is referred to as tzaddik, a righteous person, v'noshahu, and himself saved. In other words, the era of Mashiach will bring about such a clarity in the minds of people as to what's emes and what's sheker, what's tov and what's ra, what's true and false, what's good and bad, that energy of truth, which will create in us a great desire to be attached to truth, an even greater yearning to strengthen our Tzelem Elokim, to develop it quickly in the last few minutes that we have. You know, as the things in the world drive us clearer and more closely to an age that we recognize as a person is either defined through their Tzelem Elokim, or through their, which is eternal and full of life and sweet smelling, or death and decay and things that have no connection to Ruchnius. And we get more, that need to define oneself, to develop oneself becomes more and more urgent. And even Mashiach, who's a righteous person, is caught up in this energy and in this fervor and in the koach of the time, and himself evolves to be greater and greater and greater because of the time period that's carrying everyone along with it in its power. So Mashiach himself is tzaddik v'nosha, a tzaddik who himself is saved through the time of Mashiach. But then Mashiach will be able, in other words, that time period, the truths revealed in that world, in that time of the world, will determine through smell, in other words, who's alive and who's decaying. That's the determination. And when Hashem shechs the Yetzirah, which means the truth becomes clearer and clearer in the world, then the decay that exists hidden in each person to whatever degree, and in some peoples and some nations to huge degrees, will fill the world with such a horrible smell, and everybody will recognize it, and there will be no more lies anymore and no more smoke screens, and everything will be seen for exactly what it is, what's alive and what's dead. And those that are dead will be seen to be dead, and those that are alive are going to be known to be alive. Now this concept of life and death, okay, of being alive or being dead, okay, that's all associated with smell. The Ketores in the Beis HaMikdash, what was its function besides just to like teach us this concept? Technically, how did it work, right? So we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu refers to the outside Mizbeach where we offered Karbanos and the inside Mizbeach where we offered Ketores as his food and his oxygen, really, right? What he needs to live. Hashem says, Tzavis b'nei Yisrael, we command them, right? Es karbani lachmi, my karban, the sacrifices, my bread, right? Reyach nichochi, my pleasant smell, what I breathe and what I eat. Now we know that we need food and oxygen to live. In fact, I just took a 7th grade biology test, by the way. We studied for a few hours a couple weeks ago. And we learned, and our teacher taught us, that that what is, how is energy produced? What is the chemical process of respiration? Glucose, remember the C6H12O6, right? I'm sorry, C6H12O6, right? Which is glucose, plus six oxygens, six O2s, right? So food and air combined to produce six carbon dioxides. That's the waste. By the way, that's like the stench, the waste, the foul part that we don't retain within us. Water and energy. That's how we live. That's what produces our water, our life, our energy. It comes from food and air. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, in describing on a philosophical sense, is karbani, my food, my bread, and my smell. Now, what does that mean? That means that Hashem is saying that I need the karban of the animal and the ketores to live. Like, you need food and air to live. I need it to live. What does that mean? When we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as alive, we have many, many, many references where Hashem is referred to as living. Kel Chai. Elokeinu Chai. Our God that is alive, right? Our God that is Elokeinu Chayim. Our God that is in life, right? Kel Chai V'Kayim. Our living God. Well, what does Hashem need to live? Food, the carbon. And air, something to smell, something to breathe in, to inhale. That's going to be the ketores. Now, where do we produce these two ingredients? In the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, in the Mikdash, right? That's why this house, this building, is called Beis Chayenu, the house of our life, because in this house, we produce the two ingredients that Hashem needs to live. Now, what do we mean by that? Right? So we just said that the whole argument, so to speak, between the Malachim and Moshe is, how will Hashem be revealed in this world? Through Hashem's own will expressed by God to the world, and that's it, or by Hashem's will via people expressing it and releasing that will to the world. It goes through people. Hashem's will is only known through people. So what's our practical example of us expressing the will of Hashem? That's the karbanos. The karbanos that we give, all the various assorted karbanos that are offered on the outside mizbeach, either they are a karban tamid, which is the daily twice offered karban, which is an ola, which is completely burned, which demonstrates, and it's bought by the funds of the entire congregation, which is why no matter how rich or poor you are, you all have to give the exact same amount. We're going to read about Parsha Shkolim soon. Right? We have a second Adar, so it's a little later, but everyone had to give the half a shekel so that everybody was part of the communal offering called the Korban Tamid twice a day, which was totally burned. That signified our total devotion of our animal self to God. Okay? Then there's the chatas. If by accident we indulge ourselves, in other words, we let the Yetzirah become the prosecutor and become the death, you know, the angel of death, so to speak. In other words, we ingest into ourselves some decay. We allow our spiritual self to begin to die in decay. Then we expunge that from ourselves with the carbon chatas, the atonement offering, which gets that out of us, which brings us back to life. There are also other types of offerings, the karban todah, the thanksgiving offering. Just a person wants to be connected to Hashem, great love and gratitude, which is one of the shlamim, which they eat and is partially burned, and the kohen eats. Everybody eats from it. And the ola, nobody eats, obviously. It's totally burned. But there are different karbanos. These demonstrations of our devotion to Hashem, and even the demonstration that when we make a mistake, that we start over, that we can start again, we can fix it, and that we want to be attached to Hashem, and that we want to grow, and we understand that it's only free choice, the Yetzirah, that helps us grow. That's it. That's it. If we don't push against a force, we don't gain anything. So that sacrifice is Hashem's food, so to speak. It brings, what does it mean? It gives Hashem life. What does that mean? It means it creates a malach. It sends out the word of Hashem into the world. It expresses the will of Hashem through us, through what we do, through what we believe in, what our devotion is, how we feel, how we atone for ourselves when we make a mistake, how we start again, how our entire lives are dedicated to this cause. That's Hashem's food, so to speak. In other words, that gives Hashem strength to exist, to be revealed, right? To malachim are created. When we do that correctly, this produces a reach nichoach. That's the internal mizbeach, a pleasant aroma. It means that we're alive. We are truly alive, eternally alive. Connected to life. There's no decay. There's no death. There's no stench that will ever emanate from us. There's no internal decay at all. It's been removed. We're fully and completely alive. That's the smell that Hashem, that in a sense is Hashem's, the other part, that what Hashem breathes, so to speak. That his people are alive. They've achieved what they were put here to achieve. These two ingredients, in a sense, we produce in our Beis Chayenu, the house of our life. But now we see why the Ketores is the last of the Mizbech HaKetores is the last of the utensils to be discussed, because it shows the result of everything else. When we offer karbanos, it shows we're totally devoted. When we put the bread on the shulchan, what that means, and we've spoken about it in the past, the table represents that our entire approach to the material and our utilization of the material, it's all within the framework of kedusha, of holiness, so that the bracha is, remember with the shulchan, a little bit satisfies, which means our approach to the material, to our physical sustenance, to bread, the staff of life, our physical existence is that we only utilize as much as we need to be satisfied, so we have what we, you know, strength to build on the ruchnius. The whole approach, if you want to summarize, how should we approach gashmius? A little bit should satisfy us, and every bit that we increase has to have a valid and legitimate defensible purpose, not just self-indulgence, right? It has to be used correctly. There's a lot in the material physical world of, there's too much to even begin to describe. As long as it serves a defensible purpose, a legitimate purpose, a holy purpose, it's acceptable. It's part of the process. The menorah represents wisdom and light and understanding. And as long as it's devoted and channeled to truth and wisdom, all wisdom in the world is precious and holy and should be sought after, as long as it teaches us and connects us to the emes. When all of these things are in order, the self-sacrifice, the approach to materialism, the approach to the intellect, when it's all in order, then at the end of all of it, the result is the ketores, the sweet smell, that we're alive, that we're fully alive, that there's no death and decay. And by learning it, that it's the Malach HaMavis that gave Moshe the secret of the ketores, what we're being taught is, don't fool yourselves. That which could turn into a foul odor if you misread it and mismanage it is really what it's meant to be, is the source of life and pleasant aroma and ketores for you. That's what it's supposed to be. And here we'll end with one idea that my grandfather speaks about, and we've spoken about many times, that when Yaakov fought with the angel of Esav, everything we spoke about today is depicted in that little scene, and yet the Malach of Esav tries to overcome Yaakov and can't. Then he says to Yaakov, Shalcheni, now send me, ki Allah Shachar, because the sun is coming up. So Rashi says, he brings in the background. Yaakov says to him, and it is not that Yaakov actually asked him, this is the philosophical underpinnings of everything we just spoke about. Yaakov says, what do you mean you got to go? You have to leave because it's the morning, it's the dawn. Like, are you a criminal that only operates at night? In other words, are you, the Satan, a force of blackness and darkness, anti-God, that's trying to destroy me? Is that what you are? And the Malach HaMavis answers, the Satan answers, no, I'm a Malach and I need to sing Shira. Hashem created me for a good purpose like every other Malach, and I did my job. I challenged you and I lost. I'm good. I did exactly what I'm created for. Now I have to sing Shira. There's one other aspect to it. That Malach could not sing Shira until Yaakov released it, which means our vanquishing the Yetzahara is what creates the Malach that sings Shira. Another way of saying the angel that sings Shira is the word of Hashem that goes out into life and praises Hashem, because it's an expression of our achievement. Our spiritual achievement is the Malach that sings Shira. It was released by Yaakov. It's in the grip of human beings. It has to be created and released by humans. That's the concept here. And when we know this, that's really the source and the purpose of the Yetzer Hara, that it could either be for us something that causes a bad smell to emanate from us, or something that causes us to smell like daisies, they're like right fresh, then it's our choice. That's the whole point of it. To use it correctly, so that what we human beings and our behavior is called a reach nichoach, a pleasant aroma, and it is, so to speak, what gives HaKadosh Baruch Hu life, what makes Hashem be known through the world, and that's why, as we said, the Ketores is not included among the other; it's the result of all the other avoda being done correctly. Okay, we have a few minutes. Questions, Rina. Yes. Yes. Correct.
And you're talking about a good smell. And
yes.
Smell.
It's either or. Every moment in a person, every choice in a person's life is either or. There's nothing really neutral. Either it builds the tzelem elokim of a person, reveals something positive in the world, or it doesn't. Or it's the opposite. Because if Hashem is not being revealed and Hashem is being hidden, that's not good. And by the way, very important, every human being, and I must announce first, hold it, 30th, annual dinner at the Sands on February 19th. Every year we submit an ad, and thank you ad to the shul for hosting this year here in this building. And so if everybody, maybe somebody wants to, it's very soon. If anyone wants to stop in the office or hand me, you know, everyone gives usually a small contribution. We make a general ad on behalf of the shul for the shul. So if you want to do that. In any case, every human being, okay, as much as we have a Yetzer Hara, and we sometimes forget this, that wants to challenge us and give in to the temptation, we have an equally powerful Yetzer HaTov that drives us to grasp the Tzelem Elokim that we could be. And when we don't, and we give in to the immediate temptation, we do not feel good, and we do not feel happy, and we do not feel like we're alive and productive. It brings out a negativity. It brings out a self-loathing. It brings out an anger and a hostility in a person and a violent kind of aspect. You tell a person they have no tzelem elokim and they should just indulge themselves, their reaction will actually be usually hatred and violence and anger. You tell any human being that they have no tzelem elokim, you don't even have to say the words. You treat them as if they have no tzelem elokim. There's nothing human about them. There's nothing dignified about them. They're less than an animal. You disgrace them and put them down and violate them emotionally and psychologically and abuse them in all ways, as never so many people on earth are treated in their horrible, degenerate cultures that they come from. That person grows up to either kill themselves or kill other people. It doesn't work well. People have a strong desire to attach themselves to their tzelem elokim. And in the midst of and there are many books and movies about this, in the worst of situations, the most degraded of situations, there's a human spark that drives a person to try to elevate themselves, to extricate themselves, to do something a little better. That's a tzelem elokim. It's very, very powerful. And as long as a person attaches to that, they begin to create the pleasant smell, the aroma. And everybody on their madrega, in certain people, it could just be, you know, a tiny degree above living like a pure animal. That's their tzelem elokim, because that's all they're capable of. And in other societies, much more is expected, but everybody according to their challenges. But as long as a person attaches themselves to the tzelem elokim, that produces the reach nechoach, the ketores. By the way, this all relates a lot to Purim, which is usually read because Esther is Hadassah and Mordechai is Mardror. These are spices, smells in the Ketores. Yes, the only one we didn't sin with, correct. Okay, everyone.
Esther, why the Malachim fighters are getting the Torah?